This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and on affiliates. What if you knew that even if you didn't have a job, you would not starve? What if you had the financial freedom to leave a job and consider other options? What if you had a no-strings-attached financial safety net? Well, those are the questions that a growing number of people in many countries struggling with income inequality are asking in making the case for a universal basic income, or UBI. Like Social Security, except that it's not age or wage-based, a universal basic income flies in the face of capitalist ideology. But what if it actually worked to address poverty and its related issues? Two filmmakers are embarking on an ambitious journey to make the case for UBI, and I spoke with them at the recent People Summit in Chicago. Dea Schlossberg is the producer of Josh Fox's documentary, How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things That Climate Can't Change, and Conrad Shaw is a New York-based film and stage actor and screenwriter. Together, they're making a new documentary called Bootstraps, which investigates the concept of universal basic income and the realities and impacts it would have on everyday America.
I am here with Dea Schlossberg and Conrad Shaw. They are they're filmmakers who are working on an exciting new project that involves the idea of universal basic income. We're here at the People Summit in Chicago, and of course the issue of economic justice is very high on the agenda. Welcome to the program, Dea and Conrad.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So first, before we get into the project that you're working on, a lot of people may never have heard of this idea of universal basic income. Explain it. I mean, it's what it sounds like, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The idea is nobody can fall below a certain level, that everybody deserves life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And money is essentially a tool to be able to survive and get those things. And UBI is generally defined as $1,000 a month is a common number thrown out there in a lot of models. And that means that if everybody gets that, no one falls below the poverty line.
And that's not the same as a minimum wage. This is something that one might get in the same way that one gets a Social Security check if you're if you're at the age where you collect one, right?
Yeah, so the basic way to think about it is like a Social Security program expanded to everyone. And it's not means-tested like welfare. It's not based on whether you're retired. It's just everyone gets, say, that $1,000 a month to make sure that no one's on the street, everyone can pay for basic housing and needs, and people can stop thinking about what do I need to take for myself to survive in this world, and more about, okay, well, I know I can always live in dignity in a house with food. How do I want to contribute?
So, has this program or this type of a program ever been implemented anywhere, or does this exist in the realm of theory so far?
There have been trials all over the world. There was a really successful trial in Canada in the 70s. There are currently trials in Finland, in India, in Kenya.
Oakland, Ontario.
So I understand that you are also going to start some sort of a trial and basically see what would happen in the United States if you basically gave some number of people a minimal amount of money per month for no reason. They don't have to work for it or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. We think everybody is entitled to basic human rights. And that's what our trial is going to be. We're picking several people from all over the country, 15 to 20, giving them a basic income of $1,000 a month. And our documentary is going to be following them and watching how their lives change and how their decisions follow.
So you're making a documentary about how the whole thing plays out. It's not just a sort of sociological study. I mean, it is, but on film?
Right. Yeah, so right now the movement is it's very much in the academic space, and a lot of people talk about the economic policy, or if they do get into the human behavior, it's all very speculative and theory. But what we foresee happening as this becomes more and more in the public space is a reaction we see a lot, which is people say, well, I don't want to pay for someone else to get by without working. I don't want to subsidize laziness. I'm afraid other people will play video games, do drugs. The trials before have shown that this is largely a misconception about human nature. It's sort of bred into us by the sort of capitalism we live in, where you have to work to even survive, right? So what we want to show is what people actually do from all walks of life when you give them money. We want to show that, hopefully to confirm what we believe, we'll show what actually happens, but to confirm what we believe, which is that given a basic floor of economic security, people will use the money wisely, they will plan their lives more effectively, and they'll become more powerful contributors to society.
In previous experiments, is that what was found?
Yeah, absolutely. The only people who worked less were new parents and high school students who were able to finish school instead of taking a job to survive.
So those are people who really shouldn't be working anyway.
Exactly. But nobody else decreased their level of employment.
The thing a lot of people miss is they think if you give people money, they'll stop working, right? But what we do now with our welfare system is we give people conditional money. So some people call it universal basic income, some people call it unconditional basic income, but that's a very important part of it, that there is no means testing. You don't have to show that you're poor enough to get it. So what that means is there is no bureaucratic process to prove that you deserve it. So one, you never have to go through that hassle in the first place, and two, when you take work, you don't lose it. There is no disincentive to work. Right now, under welfare and unemployment, it's actually often the wise thing to do not to work because it can hurt you. If you lose your job in a week, you'll be back off benefits and you'll be poorer than you were before. But if it's something guaranteed to everyone, it's not just sort of targeted help for the poor. It's a stable floor for everyone. Anyone could lose their job. Anyone could live 20 years longer than they expected to. You know, everyone needs just to know somewhere deep inside that they're going to be fine. They're going to live a life of dignity, and they can plan more important things about what they want to contribute.
Now, $1,000 a month isn't even that much money. It's $12,000 a year. You might barely, if you live in Southern California, where I do, you might not even be able to make rent on $1,000 a month. So is it meant to be something that, you know, that small? Is it meant, the idea of universal basic income, is it meant to be something that's really a minimal amount of money, or is it meant to be something that one can live on without having to work if one chose not to?
I think that it's basically a floor. So if something happens and you aren't able to, yeah, you won't starve and you won't end up on the street. There are ways to live and have a roof over your head for $1,000 a month.
Yeah, you might have to have roommates. You know, it's not universal luxury income. It's universal basic income. So, you know, you live in a cheap situation and feed yourself while you invest in a business you're starting, or while you pursue art, or while you go back to school. You can do it. We lived in New York City. I've lived in New York City for 10 years on about that much because I was pursuing art and acting. And
New York City for $1,000 a month, amazing.
It's not easy, and I've had a lot of roommates. But the idea is, yeah, maybe it could be more someday, but $1,000 a month would be enough. That's the national poverty line, and it's that for a reason. It would be enough for anyone anywhere to live. Now, if it were actually implemented someday, I imagine it would be much like a minimum wage, where $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year would be like a national level. And if you're paying extra taxes for an expensive place to live, you'd get a local bump in your basic income as well, like in New York or San Francisco. It would be a little higher to account for that higher cost of living.
And then maybe tack it to inflation or whatever.
Definitely. Yeah.
So tell me more about the project now. So you said you would be rolling this out as a pilot program and then filming what happens to people, filming the evolution of people's lives as they get this money. How are you going to pick the people who get it? Where are they going to be distributed? You know, how far along are you in this process?
Yeah, we're pretty early on. We're in the fundraising part of the process. We're fundraising for the pilot program. The people we're selecting are people that will tell the story the best, because there are plenty of rigorous scientific studies going on.
So this isn't intended to necessarily be rigorously scientific.
No, it's definitely not. It's to
anecdotal evidence.
Yeah, to put people's faces to this concept and to tell people's real stories, and get the public more invested in the issue by, you know, appealing to emotion and humanity. But the people we're selecting will be from all over the country, all different walks of life. We'd want to get a real cross-section of the U.S.
And that's one thing that makes us different than the other pilots, is they're all intended to be very scientifically rigorous, where while they're going to come out with some very nice academic papers and arguments, our goal is to sell it to the people. They're also doing randomized selection for their candidates. We're going to be basically casting to decide what is going to tell the best story. So we want people from all walks of life. We want a farmer, a displaced manufacturing worker, a coal worker. We want teacher. We want someone in the upper middle class. You know, we want to see generally what do people do when they have extra coming in, whether it's getting out of a really bad spot or saving up for something more.
What are the kinds of things you think people would spend money on? And I think when we have these conversations, it also starts getting people thinking about what would they do with an extra $1,000 in their lives. Maybe it's the difference between, sending your pursuing your dream and actually going to school or something, because these days it's hard to afford to go to school.
Absolutely. We've actually in the past couple of weeks have had 11,000 submissions come in.
Oh, so people have submitted themselves to...
They have. They've submitted themselves. We weren't necessarily asking for submissions, but a couple articles came out framing it that way, so we embraced it, and we're reading through them, and it's pretty amazing. And for the vast majority, people just want to live their lives and contribute. So many people just say it would make ends meet. They wouldn't have to work three jobs. They would only have to work two. They could go back to school. They could support their kid. Like, it's very, very basic.
Or they could pursue entrepreneurialism, or they could pursue their art, or they can get out of their debt.
They could buy a car just to be able to get to work. A lot of people lack transportation, and it's just a terrible... Yeah.
We've had... It's overwhelming reading these responses. Some are heartbreaking. Some are inspiring. But the point is... We live in this country where a lot of the reaction is, I'm worried about what other people would do with this money. And people generally put themselves in the category of, well, I know what I would do. Everyone has a really good answer for what they would do that's beneficial to them, smart, beneficial to the economy, but then they're worried that half the rest of the country is not going to. 99% of people are going to do something great with it, and they're worried about the rest of the country doing it.
And this is the standard conservative mindset, unfortunately, to see... any kind of government-based subsidy, which of course comes from our tax dollars to begin with, as a quote handout, as something that will disincentivize people from working and undermine productivity. And there's sadly a sort of mean-spiritedness that comes out, and you hear stories of fraud being overblown. Is the idea of a universal basic income, is the challenge of having it adopted going to mean overcoming the challenge of suspicion and the sort of capitalist mentality that we take for granted in this country?
Definitely, partly. But I think another way to go about it is to reframe it. Like, the wealthy already have a basic income, essentially. They make most of their money on unearned income. They were either born or had the fortune of coming upon money that makes money for them. And what the idea of basic income is... It acknowledges that nobody is where they are because of their own hard work. A lot of people had a lot more access to the communal resources than other people, and it's giving everybody some little bit of what they deserve.
Well, and most of the productivity we have today is directly a result of the technology from yesterday we lean on. It's all inherited from our ancestors. We all should own the land, the technology, the resources. Some people are able to shrewdly take more of it, but we should all have communal wealth. And that's sort of how you can turn it around and reframe it to say that it's not a handout. It's a...
When you said communal wealth, you know that a bunch of folks are going to basically say, you're a commie.
Yeah, well... I
get that label all the time every time I talk about economic justice.
It's more like, I like to think of it more as a capitalistic system of public ownership. We're all shareholders in this country. We all contribute in our own ways. All of our ancestors have contributed. So we should all have a dividend from the country. It's not dividing all the money up equally, no matter how much you do. It's saying everyone's got a share in the company that is this country that comes from the commonwealth. The commonwealth isn't all the money we make. The commonwealth is the land. The commonwealth is the system, the structure of taxes and laws. These are all things that we should get part of the benefit from, because no one alive today created that system. And the people who take the most from it are taking more than their share from it.
And I would argue that the people whose ancestors contributed the most to that national wealth are, on the whole, receiving the least benefit.
African Americans, Native Americans.
Absolutely.
Immigrant workers.
Yep.
But the other thing is, to see it as what we need to get across is it's very much unlike welfare. It's not a handout. It's not assistance. It's for everyone.
The things that I think of when I hear you talk about that is during the George W. Bush era, he made much of tax cuts for everybody. And there was a point in time where people got some extra returns on their taxes that ended up serving as an economic stimulus. I remember people got checks, right? It was your money. The government returned some taxes. And of course, what that does is it's not always a progressive thing when that happens, but it did have the impact of stimulating the economy because most people spent that money on stuff they need. And I'm wondering if it were to be cast in that way as an economic stimulus.
That's definitely one of the big arguments for it. I mean, the ending poverty is a huge one, but also there's the benefit to the economy. I think we can pretty much close the book on trickle-down economics on that working. When you have money, for economy to thrive, it needs to move, it needs to flow. And when you have money flowing up into the big bank accounts, it just sits there, it doesn't move. The middle class is shrinking, money's not flowing. When you give money to people who need it, when in the net effect of a basic income is to have more money going to the people that need it and to the middle classes and the upper middle classes, then those people spend it on what they need. That's money straight back into the economy. That's money that is not just accruing and extracting more from our economy. It's giving straight back into it and putting people in a better situation in their lives. So if you're a local business, you all of a sudden have a whole new demographic of people that can come. Like when they raised the minimum wage in Seattle, they were worried that restaurants would have to fire all these people, but they had to hire more because all of a sudden they had a new whole demographic of people that could eat at the restaurants. Waiters and people that work at restaurants. This creates a world where everyone can step to the plate and have a little bit of economic power.
So what's the difference between pushing for a universal basic income versus pushing for a higher federal minimum wage?
Well, I mean, just to start, a minimum wage has one big assumption, which is that you have a job. Well, we're coming into a time when one of the latest estimates was that we were going to lose 20% of our jobs in the next, or no, 50% of our jobs in the next 20 years due to automation. You know, in the next 5 to 10 years, 7 million truck drivers and Uber drivers and bus drivers and people are going to lose their jobs. And you can't just assume that you're going to be able to retrain them all or new jobs will be created. Automation is coming to a turning point where it's getting better at us, not just at simple tasks, but also at general tasks, at thinking and analyzing.
Would you argue we need both a universal basic income and a higher federal minimum wage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for people who are working, I definitely think that you should be able to live off of that, but they're certainly not mutually exclusive.
But, I mean, when you have a basic income, if you think about it, it brings more accountability to both the employer and the employee, so that it strengthens the fight for minimum wage and also makes it less of the pressure on the minimum wage to take care of it. So if you think about it, if someone wants to pay you $8 an hour to clean toilets, which is not what it's worth, but before a basic income, you might have to take that because you don't know how you're going to pay your rent. After a basic income, you can say, no, I'm going to hold out for something else because I'm going to live without it. So someone will have to pay you
more economic freedom to even get a better job.
People talk about it as not only is it the permanent seed fund for people to pursue their dreams, it's a permanent strike fund to get out of bad, abusive situations, whether it's your employer or it's great for women's empowerment. You can get out of financial abuse from a relationship you don't want to be in. People can take the steps they need in their life to get themselves in better situations.
So that economic freedom can also enable them to put upward pressure on wages, in fact.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about how far along your project is and what you need right now. Where can people, I understand you have a trailer online, where can people find out more?
Sure. Our website is bootstrapsfilm.com, and we are also running a pilot project that through an organization called Hand Up to provide the funding for our characters.
So the name of the film is Bootstraps?
Bootstraps. Because the basic idea is, if we're going to have this idea in this country that we want people to lift themselves up by their bootstraps, the least we can do is provide the boots and a solid floor to stand on.
Yeah, bootstrapsfilm.com.
Well, good luck to the two of you. We'll have to have you back on the show once the film is complete.
Great, thank you.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dea Schlossberg and Conrad Shaw, filmmakers of a new documentary called Bootstraps, which investigates the concept of a universal basic income. I spoke with them at the People Summit in Chicago. You can find out more about their film at bootstrapsfilm.com. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.